started, and we may have a few more join us, but that would be okay. So we're looking at the second chapter, which the title is Centered on the Way of Love. And so what this is talking about is kind of the goal of what does it mean to be a part of the Jesus movement, to follow the way of Jesus. We talked last week about how all of God and all of Christian life is relationship. It's relationship with God, it's relationship with one another. All of Christian life is relationship, that God, God's self, is relationship. So the second chapter is about, so what's the foundation of that relationship? And the answer, you will be surprised to hear, is love. God is love. We are called to love God. And then we are called to share the love of God with our neighbor. But it all comes from God. So we start with the perfect love that is God. God is love. And because God is the greatest thing of which anything can be thought, God is perfect love. God shares that love with us. And what it means to follow the way of Jesus is that we accept God's love. We accept God's love even though we haven't earned it. And that's key. We are really bad as human beings about about being able to accept unearned, unmerited love. The church word for that is grace. But we're really bad about it. We feel like we should do something to earn it. And human beings fall into two traps. One is what I call the kindergarten trap of, I gotta earn my gold star, right? So I have to be really, really good, and if I'm just good enough, then I'll have earned it. And then the other trap is also kind of a kindergarten trap, is the, well, I'm not as bad as him, teacher. I might have been doing something wrong, but he was doing something worse, you know. So we fall into those two traps, the trying to earn it ourselves, and then trying to convince ourselves that, well, we may not be perfect, but we're not that bad, right? And that is all, those are all of the things that kind of get in the way of what God has intended. What God has said is, I love you. I love you even, God loved us even while we were still sinners, even before we accepted the love of Jesus, God loved us. And we cannot be good enough to earn God's love. Every single one of us, every day, fall short of the bar it is that God has set for us. And all of us have fallen so far short of the love of God, the glory of God, of the perfection of the law, of the commands God has for us, that we can't ever dig ourselves out of that hole. And the good news is, we don't have to, because God loves us. And so what God asks us to do is accept his love, let it fill us up, and then let it pour out of us onto others. So God loves us even though we don't deserve it and can't earn it. We're supposed to love others even though they don't deserve it and can't earn it. Right? So when we read in the Gospels all of the things about judge not that you be not judged, the measure you give will be the measure you get, forgive as you have been forgiven, that's what it's all about, is y'all, human beings, and I'm included in this, you know, we all are complete and total sinners who don't deserve God's love, but God loves us anyway. So we're supposed to love everybody without thinking about, well, they're complete and total sinners, and they don't deserve our love. We should only love those who are deserving or help those who are deserving. And the answer is, well, you're not deserving, so on what basis do you... So the Christian life, following Jesus, this is the goal, is open yourself up to accept God's love and then let that pour out from you onto others. Most of us, most of the time, have a hard time with the first part.
Let alone the second part,
right? The first, we're not all very good as human beings with accepting God's love. Accepting that God loves us exactly as we are, because we are hyper aware of all of the things that are bad about us.
And we compare that against everything that's brilliant about someone
right.
else.
Right.
So,
but,
yeah. You know, makes it even worse for
yes.
us, right?
So accepting that the creator of the universe loves us as individuals is kind of a big deal. And then to allow that to go to others, we do kind of fall into the trap of, well, God might love me, but he couldn't possibly love you, because I'm so much better than you are.
He was the guy that did that dastardly thing.
Yes.
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 That, well, you know what? I'm called to love him too.
Right.
It's hard.
Now, one of the things that the presiding bishop says in this chapter that I really like is we tend to think that the opposite of love is hate.
Yes.
And that's not true. Mm-hmm. The opposite of love is not hate. If you hate somebody, you still are connected to them, you still care about them. The opposite of love, the presiding bishop says, is selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it as the opposite of love is indifference. So, you know, either way, the opposite of love is either thinking only about yourself and not really considering others, or just not thinking about others at all. But that is, so if you want, so the opposite of love isn't, well, I hate you. And you've all, if you've had children or been around children, you know that little children, when they get frustrated with you, will say, I hate you. Okay, well, you know. But the only reason they say that is that they know that
it goes right to
your heart, so they're pushing all your buttons. But also that you're never going to come back with, all right, well then go away. You know, you might come back with, I hate you too, but most parents come back with, I love you anyway. And depending on how frustrating they're being, you know. My mother, I said that once. She said, that's fine, go to your room until you change your mind. I think I was a particularly annoying teenager at that point. But you don't hate, if you hate someone, you're not disconnected from them. And that's part of the reason that God calls us to forgiveness, is because if we hold on to hate and bitterness and resentment, we're making that person a part of our lives. That the person we hate or resent or are bitter for is a part of us still. We're carrying them around with us. So God tells us to forgive, not so much for the benefit of the person we're forgiving, but for our benefit, because it lets us then end that and stop carrying that person around with us and begin to heal that damage. So that's kind of the flip side of the opposite of love is selfishness or indifference, is the call to forgive that is a part of this love is another example of God doing things because he loves us for our benefit, not for the benefit of those around us, although loving others and forgiving others is good for them. This is supposed to be, this is really about what's
you
best
still
for us.
Learned the lesson.
Right.
Like, my role as a chaplain with victims of family violence. How could I possibly forgive him? And you're doing that for yourself. You're not staying in bondage to that relationship anymore. You are remembering, you've learned the lesson, but you're choosing love. And it is very, there's a lot of creative tension around that with someone who really has been seriously harmed. They're not just ignored on the playground, you know.
here and see what did you all want to talk about? What reflected, what raised, what questions were raised to you, what thoughts?
I don't remember.
That's okay. All right, I'll keep going then. If you turn to page 18, at the top of the page are a list of things that were the admonitions that were given to people who were participating in the civil rights movement. And these were before you were allowed to participate in a march or a sit-in or anything like that. They went over these principles with you, these admonitions with you, because they knew you were walking into a situation where hate was going to be poured upon them. And if you remember, I mean, I remember the videos of the Civil Rights Movement, but if you remember watching the Civil Rights Movement, a lot of them were young people, teenagers or college students, some of them even younger children or even adults, but were going into places where they were going to be spit on and maybe have fire hoses or dogs let loose on them. Certainly they were going to be surrounded by people screaming at them. The kind of iconic picture is the little girl, it's Ruby Bridges is her name, walking into a school that she was integrating, and all around her are these white women and men with their faces just distorted with hate, screaming at her. And, you know, she's a little kid, she's 8, I think, walking along with a U.S. Marshal behind her with all of this. And so these are the things they were told to remember. Remember that the nonviolent movement seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. So this isn't a war, we aren't going to win. We're not trying to win. We want justice and to be reconciled. Walk and talk in the manner of love, so God is love. So no matter what is thrown at you, respond back with love. Pray daily to be used by God, that all men and women might be free. So pray that God will use you, but the goal is freedom for everyone. Sacrifice personal wishes that all might be free. Observe with friends and foes the ordinary rules of courtesy. So if you're not quite sure what to do, fall back on polite behavior. Perform regular services for others and the world. Refrain from violence of fist, tongue, and heart. Strive to be in good spiritual and bodily health. And then the pledge began with these words: as you prepare to march, meditate on the life and teachings of Jesus. So go back and look at Jesus, and then remember, this is what we're about. It's about giving of ourselves so that others might be free, and that we need to show forth love in all that we do.
Do they know who really, kind of came up with that? Was it Martin Luther King Jr.? Or it just was, I mean, was the movement really started in the churches?
The movement was really started in the churches. They started with the principles of nonviolence that came out of Mahatma Gandhi's movements in India, which was 20 years before this. And then they took it into the church, basically the Baptist church, the African American Episcopal Church too, but really the Baptist church, and said, well, these principles of nonviolence resonate with the teachings of Jesus. And so it was a kind of a group of the leaders of the movement who came up with these. The Civil Rights Movement didn't start at one point. You know, it was a long thing. So by the time they were ready to do organized marches, they had the opportunity to really refine it a little bit. But I think for us. I felt, at least this week, with everything going on in the world, that it feels like hate is getting stronger. Mm-hmm. And I felt that for a while, but, you know, it just seems New Zealand is the last place I thought that there would be a mass murder and a place of worship. So it seems like hate is everywhere, and so this seems like a good reminder for us that as we move out into the world carrying the message of love and equality and that all are children of God and justice, that it's good for us to remember that the goal isn't victory over hate, it's justice and reconciliation. Hating back doesn't help.
One thing that strikes me, actually this is from the first chapter, they talk about at the end of the Montgomery bus boycott in 1956, someone asked Martin Luther King Jr. what the end goal of the boycott really was. And first he said, well, it's the end of segregation. No, the end is reconciliation. He said, no, finally, it's the creation of the beloved community, where it's the community of love. And I thought that was really good. That struck me. And my other comment is, unfortunately, our president seems to be fostering hate.
It really hurts.
It really does.
Yes.
He's the worst thing for this country that ever one could imagine.
It's another Martin Luther King quote, but it's one that I like, is hate can never overcome hate. Mm-hmm. Only love can do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Darkness can't overcome darkness. Only light can do that. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, we're called to be love and light, no matter how dark. But remember that it's not always so simple to discern right and wrong. The people who went out and marched in the civil rights movement or sat in Rosa Parks sitting on the bus or sat at the lunch counters were breaking the law. Mahatma Gandhi's folk who were fighting for freedom for Indians against British rule were breaking the law. The righteous Gentiles who hid Jews in their homes from the Nazis were breaking the law. There's a meme that goes around on Facebook occasionally that says, the people who hid Anne Frank were criminals, the people who turned her in were obeying the law. So it's not always so easy to discern what the right thing to do is. And when we discern what the right thing to do is, sometimes it has personal cost, right? We are fortunately rather privileged. If we decide to go out and engage in civil disobedience, we're middle-class educated white people. What's going to happen to us is relatively minor compared to what might happen to others. But it's important to remember that the way of love and the way of justice is not always the way of the laws of your society.
And that was part of the early Christians, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, being a Christian, that was
against
the law.
A lot of them were
executed. So we talk about love, and it's easy to say, oh, love. But love is not always easy. Love is often difficult. And choosing the way of love often has personal costs to go along with it. And again, anyone who's raised children knows this, right? That it's not always easy to give up yourself to another. There are times when you just don't want to do that. And following the way of love is making the choice to do it even when you don't particularly want to. And that's when we come back to the opposite of love isn't hate, the opposite of love is selfishness. I don't want to. it's not good for me, so I'm not going to do that. Any questions? Comments?
The only thing that I was thinking of is, I wonder how, you know, it would have been if the rest of the country, like, knew about these old rules that they were following.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if they would have looked at it differently. I'm guessing, you know, the general public was not aware of these particular things they were following. You know, they probably saw, you know, some of it, but
they didn't see the particular things they were following, but one of the things that all the documentaries say is that what really turned the tide was the pictures of people being assaulted and screamed at and, you know, hit with fire hoses and not responding. That is what really convicted the whole country that, hey, wait, you know, what's going on that, you know, people are screaming at school children, that, you know, teenagers are having fire hoses turned on them for walking down the street. And they're not, you know, it wasn't a riot. It, you know, people weren't, they weren't fighting back. They were just, and that's true, that was true in India as well, that what really turned the tide was the reports from India to Britain of all these people who, the most famous one is the March to the Sea. They walked to the sea to make salt, and the British army beat them up and killed them all. And that turned the conscience of the people in Britain of, hey, wait, peaceful people being met with, who's on the right side? So one of the things that history teaches us is that nonviolent movements have brought more justice than violent movements ever have. And it's certainly been true in our country, that the nonviolent civil rights movement changed our country in 30 years, right? Now, not that we're done. There's still lots of racism, but that was a... and they wouldn't have made as much progress if they had fully justified to say, what the hell's going on here? This is not, you know, this is not right, and fought back with violence. But I don't think it would have made as much progress. And so that's a piece of it, is the perform, the observe with friend and foes the ordinary rules of courtesy. I'm going to be polite to you even when you spit in my face. That is a really powerful thing to do, and not very easy. I'm not very good at returning. I'm not very good at turning the other cheek. I don't do it very well. So I think it's something that certainly I struggle with. I suspect a lot of us do. But it is a very powerful, it hits people in a very powerful way. When you're able to return compassion for hate.
Mm-hmm. Over my lifetime, I've heard many people make very strong arguments about if someone pushes you, push back. Mm-hmm. And these were Christians. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, it's tough to turn the other cheek, but this was a time of really ramping up against ideologies. Mm-hmm. And so there's a reason people talk about systemic racism, mm-hmm. that it's institutionalized. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that when you think back to even before the 30s, 40s, 50s, when the churches were filled every mm-hmm. Sunday and so forth, that people who were faith-filled people designed things that we accept as normal from way back when. And people have rebelled against different things, but it wasn't that someone said, oh, let's go screw someone, you know. It was really about, this is how we should live. You know, the Puritans that came over with all that persecution certainly set up some stuff that was persecuting others too. When I think about all of the Jews had gone through the World War II and so forth, and then having the privilege to be in the Holy Land and see how they are persecuting the Palestinians, including Palestinian Christians, they're trying to eradicate. And, you know, that for us was living in that for 2 weeks, living in that creative tension of awareness of someone can't deliver at the hospital because the barriers were put up so that where you would normally just go to the hospital, you have to go through like a customs clearance now and all this stuff. It just, it's extraordinarily unfair. And I think, haven't you learned a lesson of how badly you were treated and why would you turn and do that? And there is that, but they're going to hurt us, so we have to, so there's not the love that is as much Judeo as it is Christian. And, you know, every religion has its oddballs and extremists and so forth. So we've come a long way, but what we have, you know, all we can do is, what can I do today? You know, and how do I put that breastplate on to make a difference? It's... And to be loving in the face of such ugliness is so hard.
And that's certainly true for all of us, you know, right now. You know, how do you do this? How do you
respond with love in the face of hate?
Right. Yeah. How do you really become involved in the Jesus movement? Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? What do I do? You know, it's tough.
I have a question off tape.
Okay.